What you report here, as I'm reading from a news release, is that as consumers have more understanding of animal welfare issues and what's involved there, that they're more likely to gravitate to cage-free eggs?
Right. And so one of the things we learned in our own consumer research over the years is that people just don't know that much about egg-laying conditions. You ask them, you know, we've gone to different cities, given people sort of objective presentations, and these are different ways that hens are raised in the United States. And then we ask people, where do you think the eggs you buy come from? And we ask them questions like, what percentage of all eggs do you think come from a cage system? And people's perceptions are overly, let's say, we'll call them optimistic. So most people say, well, I think I'm buying the cage-free eggs. Or I think, you know, most of the eggs are coming from cage-free systems, but that's just not true. So when you look at the actual hard data, you know, it's hard to get an actual a good count on this, but really, you know, the best we can gather is that probably at least 95% of all the eggs in the United States are in a cage system. So people's perceptions and beliefs are that they're buying cage-free, you know, type eggs, when the reality is something different. So one of the things that happens when they get more information is that they probably start to realize, you know, sort of make their beliefs have to match reality. And they think, well, I wasn't really buying what I thought I was buying. And more generally, I'd say that research seems to show that people have somewhat of a romantic notion about agriculture in a lot of ways. You know, they view it as old MacDonald had a farm kind of thing. And so, I mean, the reality is often when people learn about the sort of modern production systems, which have benefits, of course, but it's not things that match with people's perceptions. So as people tend to get a little more information, sometimes it tends to provoke them to make different food choices.
One of the concerns of a lot of people in livestock production is where the information's coming from that the consumers are getting. And, you know, a lot of that information, you know, kind of has its own spin to it.
It does. You know, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting about the, so first, you're right. This is a very complicated issue. And as I mentioned with the advantages and disadvantages of cage versus cage-free, it's not like a lot of people make it out uniformly good or bad on both sides. And so it is actually kind of a tough judgment call in some cases. You know, so I mentioned the kind of study we did where we tracked consumers' purchases in California during the Prop 2 vote. And the interesting thing about that was you had advertisements being run on both sides of the issue, with both sides using probably whatever they felt were the most compelling arguments they could make. And it seems like when you look at the data that the side that was pushing to get rid of the cages, you know, ultimately was more convincing, first of all, because the proposition passed by, you know, almost 65%. And also because when we look at our data, what happened is that the relative market share for organic and cage-free eggs actually increased over that time. So those ads that were quite frankly being run by the Humane Society and others, apparently were more persuasive with the consumer than were the ads being run by the egg industry and by other groups. I'm not saying one is right or wrong. I'm just telling you which is more persuasive.
It's just always hard to understand what consumers are thinking. You know, again, you mentioned a lot of confusion there. And I guess I've often wondered, you know, what percentage of consumers really care about where their food comes from?
That's a great question. Of course, and you're exactly right. If you ask people on a survey, do you care? Oh, yeah, of course I care. You know, But that's what people tell you on surveys. You know, what they do in a grocery store is something entirely different. I think that's actually one of the biggest challenges for producers is when people go in the voting booth, like say Prop 2, they vote to ban, you know, cage systems. But when they go in the grocery store, they're not willing to pay the premium for those systems. So one way that you could think about this is that sometimes producers face sort of an unfunded mandate. I'm going to force you to adopt a system that I'm not actually willing to pay for in the grocery store. And so, you know, that really puts producers in a real pickle, and I certainly sympathize with them in that regard. So you're right. You always want to take survey answers with a grain of salt. But you know, some of the statistics I'm referring to about the growing market share and about the changes with regard to information don't come from surveys, but they come from actual grocery store purchase behavior. So we're observing what people are doing when they're actually shopping, when they, you know, when they don't think anybody's watching them or asking them questions or anything like that.
Okay, so what is the size of the cage-free segment of the industry in the U.S. now, and what do you see as the potential going forward?
Right, so it's not large. Like I said, probably the total combined cage-free and organic are probably something less than about 5%. So it's a relatively small market share. But if you look back at the changes over time, it's a market that's been growing. So if just looking, for example, at organic eggs alone, back in, I don't know, say 2004, it was probably around about 1%. And today we're up probably closer to about around 3 to 3.5%. So it's certainly a growing market, even though relatively small. And I think there are a couple of reasons that market might continue to grow. One is this sort of information issue that I talked about. You know, to the extent consumers gather information, the evidence that I've seen seems to suggest that they're going to gradually shift towards demanding cage-free, organic-type eggs. The other side of that, too, is that there's some reason to believe perhaps that the cost difference that now exists in the grocery store might change in a way that would favor cage-free and organic. And so, you know, these options are obviously a lot higher priced, sometimes 100%, 200% price premiums over conventional. And to the extent that the market gets a little larger, the supply chain gets more well-coordinated, those price premiums might come down, which would also sort of encourage some growth. Of course, nobody knows what the future is going to hold.
I just checked in the grocery store, local Hy-Vee here last weekend, and there was one package of cage-free eggs, a dozen, that were, I think, $3.47 a dozen. And I guess at what, you know, what is the price point where people care enough that they're going to pay that much for eggs?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, certainly I think the price point is the largest barrier to adoption, of course. And, you know, quite frankly, that part of that price difference is a result of real differences in production cost. And so it is more costly to produce eggs in a cage-free or organic system. And so, it's not like there's some nefarious firm out there trying to steal money out of consumers. But that being said, I think that there is a potential for those price premiums to come down. When you look at sort of budgets, studies of the cost difference of producing in a cage and a cage-free. You know, those budgetary studies suggest the cost difference of about 20, 25, 30%, but as you just suggested, the retail price premiums are often much higher. And we don't really know why that is. There are a lot of potential explanations, but that does suggest to me at least the possibility those price premiums could come down over time, especially, or at least the relative prices could change, especially if for example, right now, one of the largest egg producing groups, United Egg Producers, has been in negotiation with Humane Society to sort of jointly lobby the U.S. Congress to transition towards a system they call colony cages or enriched cages. What these are, kind of, you take the cage system and they're bigger, so the birds have more room to move around, and they also have perches and little nesting areas where they can lay their eggs. And so that would, of course, increase. So if you got rid of the old cages and went to this enriched cage system, that would represent a cost increase of the conventional variety. So it would bring those eggs up closer to what the cage-free price is.
Yeah, which, again, the argument is, consumers are going to have to pay more the more you change these production systems.
That's right. And I think, that's one reason, again, as an economist, we were interested in this topic and this issue is, you have some people that work for the animal advocacy organizations that, want to say, well, we just have to do this. This is, for whatever reason, they want to make ethical or moral argument, as they would call it. But there is a moral ethical argument on the other side, and that is there are a lot of people that have a hard time affording to eat, and inexpensive food is not a trivial matter. to a lot of people that still can, you know, get a very efficient source of protein and other nutrients from eggs. And so I guess what I'm saying is that there are trade-offs in life, and there aren't easy answers to these things. And, and you're exactly right. You make these changes that in my assessment, some people would agree with me, but in my assessment, probably does improve hen welfare, but it does have a cost. There's you don't get anything for free.
Yeah, and this legislation in Congress, it's been an interesting thing to watch because I think there's a lot of groups, animal rights, animal welfare groups that actually are opposed to that legislation. They don't want any cages at all.
Yeah, that's right. And that's an interesting debate within that community. and I think it does emphasize, you know, sometimes, you know, I give talks to a lot of animal production groups and farm groups. And one thing I think they often isn't realized in that community is that there is, you can't just paint all the animal advocacy organizations with one broad brush. There are a lot of differences between them. They're not all the same. And there are some groups that are really, you know, their goal is animal abolition. They don't want humans to own animals at all for any reason. And that's on one extreme. And on the other extreme, you have groups like this one that I did this report for, that they're saying, okay, you know, what can we do within the context of the marketplace to make what they see are productive changes where people can do it voluntarily by deciding and choosing to spend their own money that way. So these groups really are quite often quite different from each other. And as you just said, they don't always agree with each other. I do, again, my own personal assessment is, you know, moving from a, you know, cage to these colony cage systems seems to me to be an improvement in animal welfare. I think you can debate whether it ought to be mandated or not. That's a legitimate debate. But it is kind of interesting, as you say, that some groups are not in favor of that.